Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hey, welcome to the Blonde Files podcast. I'm your host, Arielle Lori, and I'm here to talk all things wellness. From how to achieve optimal health and well-being to the best beauty tips and everything in between, no topic is off limits, and I'm bringing it to you real and unfiltered. I know there is so much information out there, so I'm here to help you navigate it all. Thanks for listening. Let's get into it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Do I have a story for you? I'm definitely teasing it right now because I'm not telling it on this episode, but you guys know I'm traveling. I was traveling alone for a little bit. Now I'm with my dad, and the last 3 days has been such a shit show, such an ordeal. I'm like still recovering. I'm on no sleep. I'll tell you guys all about it on Monday when I record when I release a solo episode. So make sure you check back in on Monday for that. But today I have a great episode with Dr. Laura Bryden. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with her through her books, her best-selling books, Period Repair Manual and Hormone Repair Manual. That's how I found her. She is a naturopathic doctor with a focus on women's health. And a little background on her, she worked as a researcher and evolutionary biologist at the University of Calgary, and then she went to school for naturopathic medicine, and she talks about this in the episode, but her love of science and the natural world has really informed the way she works with patients, and she views the body as a logical, responsive system that knows what to do when it's given the right support. And she's worked with patients for 25 years. She focuses a lot on diet and lifestyle, and those are her main mechanisms to work with women's reproductive hormones and period problems. So she treats a lot of PCOS, endometriosis, perimenopause, and many other period problems. And we are talking about all of that today. So we go in depth about periods and birth control, whether women need periods, which birth control is the best decision for your body. We talk natural alternatives to the pill. We also talk about health issues like PCOS, endometriosis, heavy periods, hormonal acne, and the correlation between gut and hormonal health. So I think you guys are going to love this episode. Please enjoy Dr. Laura Bryden. Welcome, Dr. Bryden. I am very excited to have you here.
Thanks for having me. You could just call me Laura.
Thank you, Laura. Very excited to have you here, especially halfway across the world where you are. That's the beauty of Zoom, I guess. I really didn't utilize Zoom until the pandemic. And now it's like almost at least 75% of the people that I podcast with are elsewhere. I don't know if you've had that experience.
I have, but it's such a treat when you occasionally get to do an in-person interview.
Yes, it's totally different.
Yeah.
Well, to start out, can you just introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them about who you are and what you do and how you came to do it? Because I know that you had a little bit of a windy road getting to where you are.
Yeah. So I'm a naturopathic doctor. I trained in Canada, hence the Canadian accent. So my accent will be a mix of Canadian with a couple decades in Australia, plus now New Zealand. And I've been working as a clinician for about 25 years in women's health. So I mostly treat period problems, hormone problems, so PCOS, endometriosis, perimenopause, and helping women find alternatives to hormonal birth control. And I've got a couple books, Period Repair Manual for Women of Any Age and Hormone Repair Manual for Women Over 40. And my background before that, actually, before I became a naturopathic doctor, I was an evolutionary biologist, and I actually published a peer-reviewed paper in evolutionary biology. So I do tend to see things through that lens of evolution, which, you know, in the natural world, obviously, female physiology is normal, is actually probably, I would argue, the standard physiology, and which is quite a different perspective than, in some ways, than our current medical approach, which tends to view female physiology and periods as sort of a pathology to be fixed, mm-hmm. rather than a strength. So,
do you feel like that changed with the introduction of the birth control pill? I mean, this was a huge thing, obviously, and it had so many incredible benefits, but also it can be detrimental in some cases to women's health. So do you think that around that time, that's when the view around periods and women's health changed and became more pathological, or has it just been kind of like deeply ingrained?
That's a great question. And of course, if we start talking about hormonal birth control, which I think we're going to, that opens a bit of a Pandora's box, because there's lots to talk about in that story. But one thing to keep in mind is when the pill was invented in the, you know, 50s and 60s, which was actually before there was really any scientific understanding of the menstrual cycle. So almost from the get-go, we've had the suppression of the menstrual cycle with contraceptive drugs as this big elephant in the room, this thing that we're doing that we're constantly trying to sort of normalize. But it's obviously, it's not an ideal situation. I mean, one of my key messages is that women, we benefit from regular ovulation and natural menstrual cycling, and shutting it all down, well, shutting, you know, suppressing ovulation, which is what most, not all types of hormonal birth control do, you know, we're told there's these stories, these sort of narratives about how it helps to regulate hormones or it regulates the menstrual cycle. Of course, it can't do any of that. It suppresses female hormones and puts women into a temporary chemical menopause. I mean, I emphasize the temporary part of it, and then, you know, replaces our own hormones with these contraceptive drugs that are actually only kind of similar to our own hormones. This has been happening now for 3 or 4 generations. And this all started before we had really any idea of some of the effects of the estradiol and progesterone that we make with our own cycles. Mm-hmm. So in answer to your question, you know, I guess I would say the pill has arguably held back or stalled research into the menstrual cycle, because it's almost from the get-go been kind of confused between, you know, what are these contraceptive drugs doing versus what are our own hormones doing?
I know that I personally had a very different understanding of what the birth control pill could do. I mean, I thought for such a long time that it would balance your hormones, quote unquote. And right. I don't know how it is in New Zealand or how it was in Australia or Canada, these different places that you've lived, but I was put on it, I think, when I was around like 15 for no reason. I mean, I wasn't sexually active at that time. My skin was clear and I had a normal period, but it was just like, hand it out. Like, here you go. This will make your skin even more clear. And I took it. And I mean, I have like, just I've had PCOS. I don't know if there's any link there since my early 20s, and a whole slew of issues with my hormones and then the different issues that that causes. So it's been like a trickle down thing. But is it similar in other places, or do you think that's like just in the United States where it's just such a common thing to give it out?
Well, it's similar in Australia and Canada and New Zealand. Yeah, for sure. The part that really kind of gets most women or like young women like yourself kind of thinking, wait, what was I doing? It's actually when we've been told the pill will regulate the cycle, and then women figure out it actually can't do that. It's the opposite. It just kind of shuts down the menstrual cycle and then creates this withdrawal bleed that, just to be clear, is arbitrary. It's really just to mimic the menstrual cycle. There's no medical reason to bleed monthly on the combined pill. I mean, for decades, women have been told to bleed monthly, but it doesn't mean anything. And certainly for women who have had irregular cycles for various reasons, that wasn't your situation, but let's say because of PCOS or something like that, and then they get these regular pill withdrawal bleeds, it hasn't done anything to correct the underlying problem. So as soon as they stop creating those drug withdrawal bleeds, they will go back to whatever situation it was. And it's the problem is even a little deeper than that, because we know now, and here's something we didn't know when the pill was invented, for example, it takes girls or young women about 12 years to fully mature their menstrual cycles.
So you guys probably know that I am in Paris right now, and let me tell you, I am eating all the things and enjoying every minute of it, but I have to admit I'm waking up every day feeling a little bit groggy, a little bit of a food hangover because I'm eating so many things that I don't normally eat. And let me tell you, my AG1 Athletic Greens is such a savior in these moments, because I drink it as soon as I wake up, before I have my matcha or coffee or anything, and it really gets rid of that kind of food hungover, groggy feeling that I have. So with one scoop of AG1, you are absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. And this special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, aging, all of the things. I have been taking this for well over a year daily, and it's this micro habit that has so many benefits, and I really feel like it affects so many areas of my life really positively. So like I said, I always like to drink it first thing in the morning. I just mix it with about 8 ounces of water. Sometimes I throw a few ice cubes in there and shake it up, and it just gives me this kind of refreshed feeling. I get a little buzz of energy, and I just can go into my day knowing that I covered so many of my bases with this one habit. So as for the flavor, I also really love it. It tastes a little bit like kind of pineapple-y vanilla. It's not overly sweet. It doesn't have any added sugars. In fact, it has less than 1 gram of sugar. It has no GMOs, no chemicals, no artificial anything, while still tasting really good. And it is super convenient, especially when traveling. It just eliminates the need to pack so many different supplements. So right now, to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/blondefiles. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/blondefiles to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hello, I'm Ariana Maddox, reality TV star, author, mixologist, and major daydreamer. My show, Earth to Ariana, is where we can all get lost in conversation together. Whether it's the weird things we fangirl over or our trauma and triumphs, we all have a story to tell, including you. We really are all connected, and I can't wait to explore these conversations with you. Every week, we will be putting on our comfiest PJs, circling up with a cocktail, and chatting with fans and friends alike. We might even get a little too comfortable. Check out Earth to Ariana anywhere you listen to podcasts. We release new episodes every week.
So from, 12 or 13, when you get your period, the first couple of years, the periods are what are called anovulatory. So there's probably no ovulation. It's just this sort of, it's like practice bleeding, you know, practice your sort of, your body's just kind of testing the waters. There's a bit of estrogen around and getting some bleeds. But then if that process is able to progress in a healthy way, ovulation will start and starts to become more regular. And ovulation is how we make the hormone progesterone. And it actually, well, the research suggests, and I have a citation for this, it can take up to 12 years to fully mature that process. So it's not until, say, a woman's 25, if she's been allowed to cycle naturally, that she'll have kind of peak fertility, like really good levels of progesterone, like a really, what we call like a robust or strong ovulation, which is not just for making a baby, because progesterone has lots of other benefits for health. And I might just take a moment to describe a couple of the differences between our own progesterone and all the various progestins, which are the drugs like the progesterone analogs that are used in hormonal birth control. Because mistakenly, the word progesterone is used to describe those drugs, and it shouldn't be. Because although estrogen is a generic term, and the word estrogen can be used to describe the estrogen in the pill versus our own estradiol versus different estrogens, that's not the case for progesterone. Progesterone is actually should only be used to describe the hormone we either make or we can take in the form of body identical or natural progesterone. But the progestins should be called progestins, and there's many different ones actually. And depending on which one you take, they all have their own set of side effects potentially. And they're quite different from progesterone in a few key ways. So one of the ways is that our own progesterone, without being too technical, but it metabolizes in the body to what's called a neurosteroid, or kind of like a neurotransmitter. The brain loves it, called allopregnanolone. And your listeners don't have to remember that name, but it's actually quite good for the brain. And it helps to regulate what's called the HPA, or the adrenal sort of axis, our stress response system. Allopregnanolone is involved in that. Allopregnanolone is actually involved in sort of helping to mature the menstrual cycle, and arguably, I wouldn't say prevent PCOS, but sort of reduce the risk of PCOS. Because actually, interestingly, all young women actually go, it's normal to go through kind of a temporary PCOS stage in our development. And then as we become, you know, into our late teens and into our early 20s, if we're ovulating and making allopregnanolone, we sort of mature into a more mature menstrual cycle. So potentially, that's one big difference between progesterone and progestins, which is why normally our own progesterone is quite good for mood, although some women have sort of a paradoxical reaction to it. And then, of course, our premenstrual symptoms can be from that withdrawal from progesterone at the end of the cycle. But just another little difference, for example, is real progesterone is really good for hair, like head hair, like for promoting healthy hair. It has kind of an anti-androgen effect, whereas some progestins cause hair loss. And that's something that a lot of women don't realize. Like, they may have been on a pill for 10 years and starting to get this thinning of their hair, and then be told, then kind of finally figure out, oh, it's from that pill that you're taking. That's one of the more kind of heartbreaking. That kind of chronic hair loss can be very upsetting for women. And there's a few other differences like that. Like, when you really start to dig down and think about the difference between our own hormones and contraceptive drugs, that's when you really start to think, wait, what are we doing here?
On that progesterone piece, and I don't want to, like, if anybody is taking these or might be, I don't want to necessarily make anybody like scared. This is just my experience. No. But I mean, like I mentioned, I have PCOS. I've been offered every different thing, combination birth controls as a solution, progestin only birth control. What else? I was given a progestin only. I mean, they call it progesterone only, but it's progestin only IUD last year. And it was interesting when you said that it can have kind of a testosterone effect, because I was told I would have no side effects. I wouldn't feel anything. Yeah. I lasted 7 days because I felt like I was in such a heightened state of panic and like arousal, not like sexual arousal, just like, you know, fight or flight and panic. And it was crazy. I have never experienced anything like it. And my doctor told me that it was not a result of the IUD. Conversely, I've taken bioidentical progesterone and I freaking love it, because I feel great. I sleep great. I feel calm. I'm like I absolutely love it. So the difference is very stark. in my experience. I'm sure that we all used ride sharing at some point in our lives, but I know for myself as a woman, I'm not always comfortable. I definitely double and triple check license plates and make sure the driver knows my name and everything before I get into a car, but it can still be kind of uncomfortable. But that is all changing with Alto. So Alto is an amazing service. They own their fleet of 5-star safety rated luxury vehicles that are easy to find. They're all marked and they're cleaned between every passenger ride. Also, their drivers are W-2 employees, not contractors. So they're interviewed, background checked, trained, and performance managed. So you always get a great ride. And Alto is designed with you in mind, including in-app music control so that you can control the vibes. They have chargers, Wi-Fi, complimentary water, a signature scent, backseat AC controls in every car, and more. And if you choose to, you are legally allowed to bring an alcoholic beverage in your Alto. So if you're going out on the town or you're going to do something fun, you can do that. So say goodbye to the rideshare lot. Alto picks up curbside at your favorite airports, including LAX, SFO, DFW, DCA, MIA, IAH, and HOU. Alto is currently on the road in Dallas, Los Angeles, Houston, Miami, DC, and San Francisco. I absolutely love Alto. I've talked to other female friends who also feel super safe using Alto, and I know men that love them as well. So whoever you are guaranteed to have a great experience. So you can download the Alto app and use the code BLONDE in the promotion section for $20 off your first 2 rides. Again, that is the Alto app, A-L-T-O, and the code is BLONDE, B-L-O-N-D-E, in the promotion section for $20 off your first 2 rides. I'm sure most of you listened to my episode with Glucose Goddess. In it, we talked about so many tips and tricks to avoid major glucose spikes throughout the day. And something that we talked about was how even if you are being cognizant about what you're eating throughout the day, your morning coffee or matcha can set you out on the wrong foot if you are having it with oat milk or adding some kind of sweetener, which I do. I like to add maple syrup to my matcha, and that can actually kind of set you up on this roller coaster. So a hack that I was actually already doing, I was very proud of this, but that Glucose Goddess actually validated, was I have a handful of macadamia nuts with my morning matcha. And this is actually really helpful because the fat and the fiber in macadamia nuts help to reduce the spike in your blood sugar or your glucose. So my absolute favorite are House of Macadamias. The reason I love House of Macadamias over any other kind are because they work directly with South African farmers, which is the macadamia capital of the world. They package their snacks right by the source, so you have the absolute best quality and freshness. Sometimes I used to buy macadamias at the grocery store and they always tasted like plastic. This doesn't happen with House of Macadamias. Their snacks have macadamias as the first ingredient, and that includes dipped and seasoned nuts. They also have a range of bars that are so good. They actually have 45% macadamias, unburdening the superfood from any synthetic additives, added sugar, or preservatives. Their snacks are plant-based and truly a healthy indulgence. And if you didn't know this, macadamias are very special. So they are extremely rare. They account for only 1% of all nuts. And to put this into perspective, almonds make up about 30%. And their nutritional composition is unsurpassed. So they are rich in omega-7s. Omega-7s are a fatty acid that boost fat loss and increase your body's natural collagen production. So you guys can get 20% off your first purchase if you go to houseofmacadamias.com and use the code BLONDE20. Again, that's houseofmacadamias.com and the code is BLONDE20 for 20% off your first purchase.
Yeah, Yeah, with IUD is interesting, actually, with any type of IUD, there can be a nervous system reaction. It might be from the levonorgestrel, which is the drug in the IUD, or sometimes it's just an anatomical thing. But the cervix, of which obviously the IUD went through, it is kind of bumping against potentially. It has a lot of nerves, including the vagus nerve. So some women get this like really anxiety reaction from IUDs. And there's not a lot of research on that, but I predict or I suspect that's partly a nervous system reaction. But yeah, IUDs, so it delivers a little bit of the drug levonorgestrel into the uterus. It thins the uterine lining. It can be great for, to be fair, like really great for improving heavy bleeding and can help with endometriosis. And so some of my patients use the hormonal IUD. I'm not anti it in general. Like it's always a cost benefit analysis, right? And then just trying it and see how it feels. But like for a long time, the story was, oh no, it's all local. Like there's no systemic effect at all. But of course there is. And so we know that now from a bit of research that we can detect breast changes in women, like sort of by imaging breasts in women who have hormonal IUDs. We know actually the big 2016 study about mood and hormonal contraception, the progestin-only methods, including the hormonal IUD, were actually a little worse than the combined methods, partly because estrogen has a very mood-enhancing effect, even the synthetic estrogens. So, and progestins generally are not great for mood, although natural progesterone normally is quite good for mood. One thing about the hormonal IUD, it can, not in all women, but it can permit natural ovulation and natural cycling, which is quite different from most other methods. In fact, it's sort of the opposite of the pill in some ways, which is, this is something one of my messages is that with the combined pill, like the normal kind of oral estrogen birth control pill, women can bleed regularly if you're dosing in that way, but not cycle, like not ovulate, not make their own hormones. So with the pill, you bleed, but don't cycle. With the hormonal IUD, weirdly, it's actually possible to cycle, get an actual natural hormonal cycle happening, but not bleed. Mm-hmm. So, which is for some women, it's kind of the best of all worlds. They get to make their own hormones, but not have crazy, period problems.
And I got the IUD, and we won't turn this episode into my gynecological history, but but when I got it, I mentioned PCOS, I've had uterine fibroids, polyps, large cysts, this, that, and the other, PMDD, terrible bleeding, terrible pain. So I think my doctor has had success with it in that it has reduced a lot of those symptoms, especially the pain and the bleeding, really heavy bleeding, really prolonged bleeding, and helps shed the lining, right? Which is an issue for me as well. So I was all in. I was like, yes.
Ready for some relief.
Yeah, it just really didn't work for me. But I have tons of friends who absolutely love it too. So I think it really is just like a personal thing. But let's kind of rewind a little bit. So are we all more or less, this is definitely an overgeneralization, but born with naturally balanced hormones? I mean, when we begin our periods, are hormones more or less functioning? And then whatever factors start to influence them, whether that's medication, lifestyle issues, and that is what causes things to start to fluctuate and go into disarray.
Short answer, there are factors that kind of come into play before that. So kind of a sad reality, but some women are just born kind of with a higher risk for problems. And so that's important for women to hear. It's not necessarily, they've something they've done wrong. There's different, some of those risk factors actually, sadly, are coming from exposure to environmental toxins, potentially in utero. So when you were a little female fetus, or even via a concept called epigenetics. So, toxins your mother or grandmother were exposed to way before you were born. And that's creating changes in hormone receptors, hormone production. In the case of endometriosis, for example, which is a common condition that causes pain, often sometimes gets misdiagnosed as other things. But there does seem to be some evidence that it has a genetic component. Some women can, just from the gate, really, like be having problems. In some cases, it might be that they were doing pretty well, but then a combination of maybe being put on the pill too young or under eating can have a, that's actually obviously reversible. That's hasn't done any long-term harm or anything like that. That just needs to be addressed so that women can be fully nourished and get their periods back. But there's lots of ways to lose a period. Like there's lots of ways, lots of reasons for period problems, which is why certainly in natural medicine, there's no one size fits all. I mean, medicine has wanted to have this panacea, which is the pill is one size fits all. But unfortunately, it only works because it's just suppressing, it's shutting the whole system down. But that's not the same as trying to regain a regular natural cycle or obviously deal with the pain. In the case of endometriosis, there's a whole immune side to what's going on, which is not hormonal at all.
I had people send in questions for this episode and
yeah,
I got a few categories of main ones. Endometriosis was one. PCOS yeah. was another. Hormonal acne was another. So we'll try to hit best we can. I know that we could probably do a week worth of podcasts yeah. on each topic or more, but yes, definitely it's a big issue.
Yeah. Well, it's a sensitive topic. So just to be clear, my position is that women should 100% have access to hormonal birth control of all types. Probably my preference would be for the hormonal IUD when it can be tolerated, because it does sort of at least allow women to make their own hormones, which is kind of one of my main goals for women. But even some of the other types, if they're giving relief from severe symptoms, certainly if they're for that woman, if that's the, you know, what they gauge as the best method of avoiding pregnancy, then that should be available to them. There are other ways of avoiding pregnancy. There are a few non-hormonal methods, unfortunately not as many as there should be. And I think that's another way that the era, or what I call like the epoch of hormonal birth control the last 50 or 60 years has not served women, is that I think it's potentially held back because the pill's there and, you know, these drugs are there. It's sort of potentially held back research into other methods. And so there are big gaps. Like it feels like there are other methods of avoiding pregnancy that should exist. There are potentially a number of male methods that should have come to market that have not yet.
I wonder if something like that ever did come to market, though, how long it would take to shift the burden off the woman. You know, I feel like it's been, the burden has been on the woman since birth control. And again, that's not like to say birth control isn't incredible. I mean, yeah. the pill, but
they, yeah, men are interested.
Oh, good.
They are. I mean, that's what the surveys, that's what the, you know, they're getting participants in these studies. And so men are stepping up, I feel. I mean, that's an objective finding. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have reason to be optimistic about that. It'll be great for women to have, mm-hmm. the burden shift a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, and potentially there's other methods for women too that have not, I mean, really, if you think about it, that's what I say in my first book, Period Repair Manual. Like, think of all the technology we have, and yet the way we're still, you know, choosing to try to avoid pregnancy is by shutting the entire female hormonal system down. Like, it's very primitive, really. Like, it's kind of barbaric if you think about it.
You guys know by now that I am traveling. I'm in France. I'm sure you're listening to this going, we know, we get it, girl. We've heard you say it 1,000 times. But this is relevant because I have to tell you guys how much my Ned products have been getting me through this trip. And not just one product, all of them. So we'll start with flying. I used to really hate flying. I went through a phase for a couple years during the pandemic where I was terrified of it. I'm not that bad anymore. But I still have a little bit of trouble getting comfortable on like a really long haul flight. So Ned's De-Stress Blend is my go-to. It helps me so much whenever I'm having anxiety or I just need a little bit of help relaxing. So that is one. The sleep oil is amazing for jet lag. I think that this is part of the key for me. I talked about how in Italy I didn't get jet lagged at all, and I was using the sleep oil and I did it again this trip and I have not been jet lagged at all. So it really helps me to fall asleep and stay asleep and just be relaxed when I wake up. I don't have that groggy feeling that I get if I take melatonin or something. And then, of course, the mellow magnesium. So this is probably the most important one for me on this trip because I'm currently doing a bike trip through Normandy where I'm riding 30 to 50 miles a day. So the mellow magnesium is a really powerful daily magnesium supplement with amino acids and trace minerals that help with memory, mood, brain function, stress response, nerve and muscle health, and recovery. It helps me so much when I'm like really sore. And yes, sleep. So I love Ned's CBD. It's cold extracted from the world's purest USDA certified organic hemp in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. All of their products are just made so thoughtfully and they're the absolute highest quality. They also share third-party lab reports on their site, who farms their products and their extraction process. So you know exactly what you're getting. And I'm not the only one who loves Ned. They have over 2,000 five-star reviews. So you can become the best version of yourself and get 15% off Ned products with the code BLONDE. Just go to helloned.com/blonde or enter the code BLONDE at checkout. That's HELLONED.com/blonde to get 15% off. As much as I love traveling and trying new foods and experiencing all of it, it can be a little bit overwhelming for my system. And I definitely do start to look forward to getting home, getting back to my routines and my meals towards the end of a trip. And something that I like to do before I get home is to set up delivery from Sakara for when I get home so I don't have to worry about cooking, grocery shopping, and all of that. This is also a great hack for just regular life when I'm really busy. So Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine. They are on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. I would definitely recommend going to check out the menu in your area for next week. They have some chef and residence meals right now, including a plant-based take on the lobster salad from Duryea's in Montauk. They have cacao chip and almond waffles, soothing butternut squash soup, cherry tea cake, chia pumpkin bread, acorn squash salad, AB&J parfaits, and more. They're definitely starting to incorporate some of those fall flavors that we all love. So just go to sakara.com and put your zip code in and you can check out for yourself what is on the menu in your area. The food is always amazing. And they also have the Sakara shop, which is stocked with functional, plant-rich products and wellness essentials to help you create a body you feel strong and vibrant in, like their best-selling metabolism super powder, plant protein bars, teas, and their super seed and nut blends. And true story, my mom was supposed to come on this trip to France, but my dad came instead. That's a different story in and of itself, but she had ordered a box of the Sakara protein bars and she sent him here with them for the bike portion of the trip. So I get to have a Sakara protein bar every day on my bike trip. They're so good. Definitely try those. And right now, Sakara is offering my listeners 20% off your first order if you go to sakara.com/blondefiles20. Or enter the code BLONDEFILES20 at checkout. That's sakara.com, sakara.com/blondefiles20 to get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/blondefiles20. I'm kind of curious, like, if somebody wanted to find out when they were fertile, but they have PCOS or they have just irregular periods for whatever reason, and can they still figure that out through temperature and cervical fluid and all of that, even if it's not regular every month?
Yes. Short answer, yes. I mean, some of the algorithms are not valid for very irregular cycles. So you sort of have to look at the finer print of the computer algorithms. But in terms of, you could still figure out ovulation, like certainly if you're using temperatures or cervical fluid, even with a longer cycle, it's still possible to use that method. You have to know what to look for. Yeah. So potentially with PCOS, it can be tricky because you can see fertile fluid or mucus. It looks like when it's at its peak day, it looks like raw egg white. It's this very slippery, quite a different sort of discharge than you get just on a normal kind of what they call dry day. Like it's liquid, it's fluid, it's gel-like. Normally that would come just before ovulation, but with PCOS, with perimenopause, anytime when there's sort of a problem with ovulation, you can see that a few times before you actually ovulate. So having seen that and then that going by doesn't mean that ovulation is behind you. You have to actually, in that case, you have to know what you're doing and like track temperatures to confirm, did ovulation actually happen or was that just a body attempting to ovulate? So mm-hmm. In answer to your question, yeah, you can still use those methods. In the case of DAISY, for example, which is a method that a lot of my patients use, it's one I'm most familiar with. Like obviously it gives a red, yellow, or green day. So red means you're definitely fertile. Yellow means it doesn't know. And green means it's 3% confident that you're not fertile if you see a green. Mm-hmm. And in the case of irregular cycles, it won't give a, you'll just get lots of yellow days, basically. Days when it's just not sure. It won't give a green day until it's like, oh yeah, detected the temperature change for ovulation. So that's the difference. You just potentially have a lot, it's kind of frustrating because you have a lot more days when you're not sure. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a very regular cycle, you're going to have a lot more safe days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So PCOS. There are so many angles that we could approach this from, but I guess let's just talk about potential causes, how to diagnose it, and how to manage it or navigate.
Let's talk about how to diagnose it first. PCOS is both overdiagnosed, which we'll talk about, and underdiagnosed. And a big part of the problem is this using ultrasound, using the finding of polycystic ovaries to try to diagnose when it actually can't do that. Arguably, through my perspective, this is kind of a bold statement, but I explained it in the paper. I think the finding of polycystic ovaries should just be thrown out. It's not a valid method of diagnosing this condition because a lot of women, any woman at any time can show polycystic ovaries, essentially. She can have polycystic ovaries if everything's fine. Like there's just nothing, no problem at all. She can have polycystic ovaries if she's under eating and has lost her period that way. And that's actually very different from PCOS. She can have polycystic ovaries if she has endometriosis, which is a totally separate condition. So, and at the same time, conversely, especially in older women, like by their late 30s and into their early 40s, can have the hormonal condition PCOS, but not have polycystic ovaries, which is sort of the underdiagnosis component. Mm-hmm. Because it's really just about the number of follicles. They're not cysts. I mean, there is such thing as ovarian cysts, and there's different types of ovarian cysts, and cysts can cause pain and problems. That's a separate, totally separate issue, actually. The so-called polycystic are just multiple small eggs or follicles. And if you think about it, younger women have more eggs in their ovaries. That's just a fact. And so this is where a lot of young women get mistakenly told they have polycystic ovaries and they really just have a lot of eggs because they're young. Mm-hmm. And so sort of issues around the magnification of the, you know, the modern ultrasounds are picking up a lot more follicles. And so there's a whole set of papers around this and trying to rename the condition potentially and take the emphasis off the polycystic appearance. So at the end of the day, what PCOS is, by definition, essentially it is the situation of having high androgens or too many male hormones, including testosterone, when all other causes of that have been ruled out. So there are other reasons, there's something called adrenal hyperplasia, which is not common, but not totally uncommon, which affects about 1 in 100 women. That's a different condition, right? Like they often get misdiagnosed as PCOS, but they actually need different treatment because they have high testosterone for another reason. High prolactin can cause high testosterone. So there's lots of different causes. And it's sort of a diagnostic process of identifying the high androgens, whether that's with blood tests or just symptoms. Symptoms would be facial hair and or quite strong jawline acne. And thinning part type of hair loss. All those symptoms don't have to be there, but those are all potentially androgen symptoms. And weight gain around the middle is an androgen symptom because in the female body, too much testosterone or androgens can cause or drive insulin resistance or weight gain around the middle. As women, we need a small amount of testosterone. So it's not like we want zero, mm-hmm. but there is a sweet spot and having high levels is not good in the long term. So that's the diagnostic process, is acknowledging you have high androgens. And then the next stage is how you lower those androgens. Mm-hmm. The pill can 100% lower androgens, which is why it's given, especially depending on some of the progestins or, well, you know, the estrogen in the pill, the synthetic estrogen lowers androgens. Some progestins specifically are anti-androgens. So they can, the pills, different pills can definitely relieve androgen symptoms such as skin breakouts and facial hair. But the symptoms will come back when you stop it. This is like, it's only a Band-Aid, right? And mm-hmm. it hasn't done anything to recalibrate or help to regulate the cyst, the hormonal system. So top two kind of methods that I, different medicines that I talk about in peer-to-peer manual and in my paper, but the big ones on my radar right now, one is called inositol or myo-inositol. It's really good. I always feel like I'm doing an infomercial for this supplement when I talk about it. Like it's very inexpensive. Like it's so mm-hmm. cheap, which is great. And it tastes good. You usually want to take it as a powder because you need quite a lot mm-hmm. and you need to take it for quite a long time. And any brand is fine, essentially. And it's done so well in clinical trials that it is truly evidence-based medicine for PCOS. It made it into the 2018 international guidelines for PCOS, which was amazing to me. It's safe when you're trying for pregnancy. It's really great. So it can help with, you know, weight loss. It can help with gradually. And it's not as immediately anti-androgen as the pills say, but it mm-hmm. does help. And then one of the other treatments is called cyclic progesterone therapy. So this is using the real progesterone, like you mentioned earlier that you've, you know, tried it.
Days 14 to 28.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that in the States, it's called, you can either get it as Prometrium. It's by prescription, mm-hmm. either as Prometrium or a compounded formula. It usually works better as a capsule, although it is also possible to take progesterone as a cream. But most of the clinical trials are using capsules. The endocrinology professor, who's quite a close colleague of mine, Geraldine Pryor from Canada, her lab in Vancouver is currently doing a clinical trial of cyclic progesterone therapy, natural progesterone for PCOS. So yes, little plug, if any of your listeners are in Vancouver and want to be part of that trial, they're still recruiting. They need people in person because they do a little bit of testing and it's not too difficult for the participants, but you do need to be able to sort of go to her lab in person.
No, that's helpful. And I'm sure I do have listeners there that would want to participate.
Yeah. Science.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are there, I mean, I feel like you hear a lot that PCOS is a lifestyle issue and you lifestyle your way into it and you can lifestyle your way out. How valid is that?
Yeah, I think that's, that's not entirely fair. That's mm-hmm. really not, because we know from the research, this is where this in utero, I mentioned earlier, like, you know, when we're little baby female fetuses in utero mm-hmm. being exposed to different environmental toxins and different things can kind of set us up or increase our risk for different hormonal conditions. PCOS is definitely like that. So in utero exposure to androgens, either from maybe your mother had PCOS or environmental toxins or, you know, different, whatever the factors are, that increases the risk of PCOS by 5 times. So women are born with a risk. Some women are just never going to get PCOS, no matter how much, you know, how bad their diet is. It is true that, for example, like a diet that promotes insulin resistance, so, you know, maybe high sugar, high processed food, that kind of will worsen the condition and potentially, and anyone can sort of push you into a state of higher androgen. So there's what the great thing is that means diet can also help to reverse it. So mm-hmm. eating a more whole food diet, avoiding concentrated sugars. I'm not saying everyone needs a low carb diet or you have to avoid fruit or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about like soft drinks and desserts and that type of food can potentially worsen PCOS, especially in women who are genetically susceptible mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah. To that point about diet, I mean, there's so many different things that
I know
we could talk about, but a big one that I wanted to ask you about and that a lot of the listeners asked about too was the connection between things like gut health and hormonal health. And again, like, my experience has been that when I was dealing with a really bad issue that started in my gut years ago, my period stopped. It just stopped. And I'm curious, like, scientifically, what that connection is and how much they influence each other, if at all. Not if at all.
Oh, no, there's a lot of crosstalk. As you can imagine, there's a lot of potential effects from the gut, for sure. I'll answer your question about your period stopping, but just circling back to endometriosis, there's a huge connection with the gut. It's actually more to do with a type of inflammation coming from the gut and sort of a whole picture emerging in the research around that. But in terms of irregular periods, there's lots of ways gut problems could cause that. I mean, certainly if you're not absorbing the nutrients, you need to, the brain needs to be absolutely 100% convinced that there's enough nutrition coming in to agree to ovulate. Like if there's any gap, then the brain's like, oh, no, don't think that's not a good idea. I don't want to do that. Because obviously the brain needs to be ready to make a baby. And the thing is, if you want to ovulate, you have to convince your brain it's okay to safe and okay to make a baby, even if you don't want a baby, because this is just how female physiology works. But another thing that happens that I see with my patients, especially when there's a lot of gut problems, and then women they're trying to find a way to not bloat, you know, not have the pain. So they start, you know, reducing FODMAPs and carbs, and which is understandable, like just trying to find a way to feel better. That can inadvertently lead to unintentional under eating. That's just, then you're just not getting enough. That's a situation potentially of sort of a hypothalamic amenorrhea or under eating. And again, under eating or losing your period to under eating can be misdiagnosed as PCOS. In fact, often is, because polycystic ovaries could 100% be there and they don't really mean anything in that case. Lots of ways that gut problems. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about stress? Is it a similar mechanism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any kind of stress, certainly like illness or, traveling, or because as I say in peer to peer manual, our monthly regular ovulation is our monthly report card in a good way. So it's not necessarily a bad thing if you've, missed a period or two or missed an ovulation because you were stressed, or it's just feedback from your body, right? It's just your body saying, oh, like telling you that's where that's how sensitive your body is to those stresses. And it's actually quite handy, because then we're like, oh, that was, I need to, observing our period and some of the symptoms around our period as a nice feedback to say, am I eating enough? Am I getting enough sleep? Is this working for me, what I'm doing right now? And when I'm practicing, because I occasionally treat men as well, and then I'm always just left sitting there going, wait, but where's their period? I need to ask about the period, gives such a great window into health, and I don't, have that for them. So.
Right. Well, I have an F-.
No. Well.
But I'm working on it.
I say report card is kind of just an easy way to think about it. But again, acknowledging there are lots of factors outside of our control too that are causing symptoms, that it's not your fault necessarily.
Yeah. Okay. I want to go through some of the questions and see if we can just do like maybe some rapid fire. I know that none of these are really... warrant a rapid response. They're so nuanced and there's so much that goes into all of them.
But
yeah. Okay. A big, big one was hormonal acne. And we kind of touched on that. Is that all just the androgen effect?
Okay. So I have a blog post and I have my own little podcast, which is just me talking for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. I have one on post-pill androgens. So just one thing women need to know is particular pills include, especially Yasmin or anything that the pills that have the progestin drospirenone, which is a anti-androgen drug, essentially, that there is potentially going to be a rebound acne when you stop those. So those kinds of pills work really well for suppressing androgens and improving skin, but it comes with a cost, unfortunately, which is that when you stop them, there can be a temporary surge in androgens that you can sometimes pick up on a blood test, actually, but certainly you can see in the symptoms. And because there's a bit of a lag time. So it's usually the skin problems really fire up about 3 months off the pill, 3 to 6 months off the pills, when they just kind of start going crazy. Mm-hmm. And because we're women, we're like, oh, I'm broken. Oh, I get, I'll talk to my patients, they're like, oh gosh, there must be something really wrong with me for my skin to do this. And one of my messages is, in that situation, it's not necessarily something wrong with you. It's the drug you were given and now you're trying to withdraw from. Mm-hmm. So what's important about that is the withdrawal process won't last forever. Obviously, there are treatments that I suggest, and the various strategies you can try to minimize that. But very often, just knowing it's not going to last forever, it's not how you are. It's not inherently something wrong with the hormonal system. It's just the hormonal system trying to adjust to coming off that anti-androgen drug. It's sort of mentally, it kind of shifts, helps women shift.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is helpful. Does that happen with spironolactone as well?
Yes. Well, actually, drospirenone and spironolactone are almost the same drug.
Well, I think we've talked a lot about the different things that can happen as a result of our periods being imbalanced and being on the pill and going off the pill and all of that. But what are some ways that women can best support their bodies and best support their hormones, whether they're on the pill or off the pill or going off the pill? And I would imagine that varies depending on the circumstances. But what are, if there are some universal things, like whether it's sleep or, you know, focusing on nutrition or anything that we can, supplementation, whatever it is.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Great question. I'm going to have to answer this kind of in a more philosophical way, which is that it's really important to understand our periods and hormones are not separate from the rest of our health. So whatever is going on with your general health, whether it be gut or, you know, is going to potentially manifest itself in period problems. So there's no one set of things that just work for periods. It's always about coming back to what does my body actually need? Like, what is the obstacle to me being healthy, which will often be the same obstacle to having healthy periods. It is important to eat enough. There is different, obviously many different ways to lose a period, but under eating is a common one and it's a commonly missed one. So I just want to say for what it's worth that as women, we actually need a lot more food than we might've been led to believe. Mm-hmm. And the same diet that works for a 40 something man, he's like, you know, fasting and low carb and like, he's just thriving on that. A 20-year-old woman is going to crash on that. And there's an age thing too, because women in menopause are a whole different, have a whole different set of requirements. And so I know for a fact that some of your listeners have lost their period to under eating. And especially just if you potentially are in that situation, but have been mistakenly told you have PCOS and are now trying to go lower carb than you were before, you're going in the wrong direction from what your body needs. Some low carb is fine for some people. I'm not saying nobody should do it, but I'm just saying be very careful if you're getting your advice, dietary advice from a 40-year-old man and you happen to be a 20-year-old woman, because that's a very different situation physiologically. I've been in a few Twitter debates about this. And also just coming off the pill, philosophically, just understand like you've only masked whatever was going on before you went on the pill. So when you come off, just to be clear, like pill bleeds are not periods. So if you've gone from having regular pill bleeds and then you stop the pill, you go back to whatever was underneath that. Like, it's not like your period stopped when you came off the pill. You, like, your last real period was whenever 15 years ago when you first started the pill, if that makes sense. So you really have to sort of think about it in the right way to be able to figure out what the body needs. And then you come off and you're back with PCOS that you had in your 20s, and it probably hasn't gone away, although it is possible to outgrow PCOS in some cases. So I hope, I know that's a little coy, and I'm not trying to be coy at all. Like, I think it's the only way to success is to try to figure out actually what is going on for real. And that will potentially need help from your doctor. So this is why in both my books, actually, I have sections called How to Speak with Your Doctor about like questions to ask. It's like, you know, well, am I ovulating? Or, you know, what is it possible that I have PCOS? Or is it possible I don't have PCOS? Or could this be endometriosis? And just try to get some answers so that you then know what is the logical next step.
Yeah. And I did get a lot of questions about what to specifically ask for as far as labs go. And you talk about all of that. So
I might give you one little example. One of my favorite ones is for anyone sitting there thinking, wait, is it PCOS or is it under eating? Like, which one is it? Because they can look very similar and they're actually entirely different in terms of treatment. So a test I often use, it's just a normal, boring test that you can get from any doctor. It's a blood test for two hormones called LH and FSH, they're pituitary hormones. You'd get them in a blood test. And if you, very generally, if you're looking at that on a, preferably like early in the cycle, if there is any kind of cycle, day two or three from the counting from day two means you're like on day two of your bleed, then in general with PCOS, you'll usually see kind of an elevated LH compared to FSH, not always, but usually. And then with undereating, you'll often see a very suppressed or low LH compared to FSH. So that can just be, that's like a little troubleshooting thing that you can even, you know, ask your doctor or kind of go back and look at your lab reports that you already have and try to get a clue that way. That's an example of a lab test. I do mostly kind of normal, like blood tests. I test insulin, I test for insulin resistance. I test for thyroid. I test for a hormone called prolactin. I don't do with my own patients a lot of functional testing or expensive, fancy testing. It's a lot of, you know, testing your iron, like women are often low in iron. It's very boring, but it should not be overlooked because low iron can make you feel quite terrible and cause hair loss. And for example,
Amazing. Well, I have a million more questions. So maybe we'll have to do a part two someday.
Sounds good.
Do you work with people virtually or how does that work?
No, I see, so I live in Christchurch, New Zealand. I see patients here.
Got it.
Face to face. I'm kind of old school that way. I really do like sitting down with people in a consulting room and But I have a forum. I have obviously my blog at larabryden.com. I have my podcast and forum and people can ask me questions in some of those places. Yeah. On my social media.
And your book is so helpful, Period Repair Manual. And I have not gotten Hormone Repair Manual, but I'm sure it's equally as helpful. Can you tell everybody where they can find all of that, where they can find your podcast and follow you and all that good stuff?
Sure. Yeah, I'm easy to find. Everything is larabryden.com. So everything links from there. All my social media is at larabryden. My two books, Period Repair Manual and Hormone Repair Manual, are on Amazon, or, you know, just all the normal online bookshops. And yeah, it's been a delight to talk to you, Ariel.
Thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, it's going to be very helpful for a lot of people. So thank you. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you liked it, and if you like the show in general, please take a second to rate, review, and subscribe. It goes a long way, and it's actually the best way to support the show. Also, if you want to see more about each episode, you can head over to the Blonde Files podcast on Instagram. I'm always posting about each episode there or over on my personal page at Ariel Laurie.
Note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.